It was just awkward being around people and meeting people, and I never liked who people were meeting, you know? And I didn't know that, obviously. I also had a certain amount of, I thought that that's how it was for everybody. And, you know, parents will just label it as being shy, which absolutely was being shy, but I think the reason behind why I was being shy, you know.
So shy was like a coping mechanism, because underneath was all of these things that you had no idea how to express, or and maybe even nobody to express it to.
Hello. Today we have a very special episode. Today, I put it all on the table and answer the question, just what the heck is a transgender? This episode does have a content warning on it. It is very personal to me and does include talk of suicidal ideation. It is not our intent to upset or trigger anyone. This is just a look into the life and trauma of someone who has changed their gender and all the beautiful and painful moments that came with it. I really hope this episode resonates with you in some way, and we thank you for tuning in. Okay, meow meow.
Meow meow.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Hey, happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride. I'm assuming this episode's still going to release in the Pride Month, but if not, and it's July when people are watching this, oopsie. We recorded it in Pride, though.
Believe us. That's right.
It's the gay one.
Is that just the title of it?
It's the gay one. Yeah. But I'm like... Like, me being gay is such a small part of this, because it's like, well, I guess I'm technically gay.
There's lots.
It's the trans one.
The trans one. There's lots and lots to talk about. And I'm just so thankful that you're willing to come and share your story. I really want to put, like, a spotlight on you, Jenny. And, you know, I want to hear your story. I want to, you know, from
put it on
beginning
me.
To end.
Put me under the limelight. Like, I'm ready. Well, and I feel like...
She ready.
So many... Yes. So many queer people, like... I can't emphasize enough that it is not queer people's job to tell their story, you know, and there's so many queer people where it's going to be triggering or traumatizing for them to go through that, and in no way should queer people have to justify their existence in any sort of way, shape, or form. But at the same time, I also know there are a lot of people who are lay and who don't get it, you know, and who a lot of this is new for them. And they are good people who are trying to understand, but they just haven't had it explained to them. And I get that, you know, and I also know there's a lot of people who don't want it explained and are just full of hate. This isn't for those people.
You are invited to come back when we're just talking about dead people.
Yeah.
Magical tea.
I mean, if you're bigoted or transphobic and you're watching this podcast, like, what are you doing? But yeah, and I don't know.
Although you are welcome. I mean, come with an open mind, you know?
True. Like, absolutely. Even if it's like some sort of weird fetish thing, like, please join us. We won't know.
Love it. You know, that is part of the goal, right? Is the more people put their voices out there, not only is there the potential for it to just kind of open doors and windows in unexpected places, but it's also an opportunity for people who are, you know, sharing the same experience to have an opportunity to have that all important representation. And I know that's a word that, you know, it's another one of those buzzwords, and aren't we all enlightened? But guys, representation really, really, really matters. And both Jenny and I are super fixated on movies and media, you know? So it's, and that's another episode for us to talk about. Like, when was the first time that we felt like we actually saw any kind of mirror of ourselves in the media? And then to be able to have this kind of a, you know, situation where you can just speak your own story is so fantastic.
Well, and I feel like as an upcoming storyteller, it's unfortunately a very necessary piece for me because we need more trans representation in media. And because when you get someone who is cis making a trans character, 9 times out of 10, it's very obvious. And like, it really shows through that this isn't a trans person telling the story. Yeah. You know, like, so as a future director who is trans, it is like, I'm definitely taking up the mantle of like, I need to tell some trans stories from a trans perspective. And you know, we need to have this conversation more, and it's uncomfortable, for a lot of people. And I get it. I do. It was uncomfortable for me.
Turns out.
But you know, well, it's necessary though. So yay. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. So, you know, I think I'm just going to kind of take a step back and move a little bit into interviewer and listener and receiver mode, and man, just dive in. But I am going to ask clarifying things, if that's all right,
yes,
because
please.
I am coming from not only a generation that did not. I mean, I've been surrounded by transgender people almost my entire life, but there wasn't education around it. There wasn't conversation around it. It was always a question of like, you know, am I allowed to ask questions? Are questions unwelcome? You know, hey, why don't I just go ahead and treat them like a person? But there was always all of these things in my head that I wanted to know more about. Again, your job is not to educate me, but hey, it's a podcast. So
I love educating people though.
All right.
So I will definitely take up that mantle.
That is part of your activism for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I don't know, I guess that's a good starting point is like, I think a big part of this conversation for me is the idea of gender dysphoria itself and what that feels like. Because it's not something that's easily describable, you know, it's like trying to encapsulate what being gay feels like. And it's like, I just am. But you know, I feel like that's where a lot of the difficulties growing up came from, is because I didn't know I was trans until I was an adult, you know, and the signs were always there. The roadmaps were always there, which will be fun to go into this episode.
Yes, please.
But, you know, nobody talks about what gender dysphoria feels like. Like, there's not like a definition of, oh, this is gender dysphoria, especially back then. So like, you know, I just thought I was horny. I just thought I was excessively horny. I won't lie to you. You know, like you'd look at cis women and you have this overwhelming, like, feeling. Like, and it's more than just attraction. It's more than just horniness and sexuality. That's how I interpreted it back then. But now I understand it. It's like a deep-seated, I don't want to say envy, but like, it takes you out of your world, you know? There's just something that draws you that you're just like, something's missing here. And it hurts a lot. The best way I could describe gender dysphoria or gender envy is you're watching a TV show and or a movie, and there's a character on that movie as a child that you really, really loved, and you just wanted to be them so bad, and you're just like, yes, this is everything. It's like that multiplied times 1,000. And there's this certain amount of pain that's there because you're not that person, but you don't realize that's what it is. So like, you know, I had I would see a classmate who was really pretty, and it would just be this overwhelming feeling of depression when I'd see them, you know, and I attributed it to, oh, I'm attracted to this person and I know I won't be able to sleep with this person, so that's making me depressed. And because that was the only explanation that I had, you know, and like looking back, there are so many trans influences in just what I was watching and who I was around. And like, I'll revisit old TV shows that I absolutely adored as a child, and so many of them will have like strong female characters who are just like how I would have envisioned myself. And I watch them now and I'm like, holy crap. Right. Like Kim Possible, oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Like holy cow. And I, you know, I was a kid. I was like 6 or 7. It wasn't like sexuality. It wasn't horniness. It was attraction. You know, it was not a romantic or sexual attraction. It was a baseline vibrational attraction, you know, where I'm just like, oh, I just feel so connected with this person. And it sucks and it hurts. And, you know,
it's a remarkable way to put it, like that it's a vibrational connection. And I think that the people who are, you know, who understand because there's no other words for it. Like, that's probably the best definition that I've heard for it. What was it about Kim Possible that...
I don't know. I mean, you know, and because I interpreted it as sexuality, there's so much of that that crosses for me now, especially because I'm a lesbian. So it's like, you know, that you're attracted to them and you want to be them. Dichotomy, and I definitely had a thing for redheads, so I think that was part of it. But like, she was just so strong and sure of herself and firm in things, and I think had the ability to take charge in her life. You know, like, I also really love Totally Spies, which is another spy thing, which is really funny. And for those who
duality,
don't know...
Duality, espionage, yes. assuming disguises. Hmm.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I feel like there's certain characters who are female that I got pulled to, and those characters would always just be sure of themselves and have firm footing in themselves. And I had a lot of anxiety growing up, a lot, and... I think some of it could absolutely be attributed to trauma, to ADHD and having a neurotypical parent. But it started at such a young age for me that it's hard for me to say that it's all that, which might be another, you know, topic. But yeah, I don't know. My thoughts are getting jumbled now that I'm going through it. So I'm going to try and streamline things a little bit. But the best way I can describe it is now that I'm an adult, I often think back to when was I happy, to put it a bad but true way. And I really think things didn't start getting bad for me until late grade school, so late elementary school, early middle school, because I do remember having happy thoughts and I remember being okay most of the time. But after a while, you just start to not feel at home in your own skin. And you start being around people who better encapsulate how you internally view yourself, but you don't have the words for that. You don't have the understanding for that. So what it evolves into is self-hatred. It truly is. I absolutely, and it's hard to say this because it feels dramatic, but it's the truth. I hated myself before I understood what the concept of hatred was. You know, like, I had a disdain for myself before I understood what it meant to hate things. And then once I did, it was just very easy for me to apply that label to myself. You know, and I don't think people fully understand how bad gender trauma can be and gender dysphoria can be because of that. And I'll try and give, like, a better, like, analysis overall. But, like, the general is just kind of, like, you know, spending that long of a time in the wrong body, viewing yourself differently than how you look, and having that be during your formative years, oh my gosh, like, wow, it's trauma that's going to take your entire life to rub off, honestly. Like, it's, you know, having no sense of self, 'cause from a very young age, I was always uncomfortable in spaces. You know, I was uncomfortable being around people. I was uncomfortable having people perceive me. If I was in a space with a lot of people and I did something wrong, it would set me off really fast because I just had this idea that I couldn't do anything right from a young age for some reason. And so, you know, it was just awkward being around people and meeting people, and I never liked who people were meeting, you know, and I didn't know that, obviously. I also had a certain amount of, I thought that that's how it was for everybody, and, you know, parents will just label it as being shy, which absolutely was being shy, but I think the reason behind why I was being shy, you know,
So shy was like a coping mechanism, because underneath was all of these things that you had no idea how to express, or and maybe even nobody to express it to.
Right. Well, and you start developing a dissatisfaction with who you are as a person from a young age. And because your brain is still forming an idea of who you are, you don't know how to cope with it. You know, you don't know how to change things. You don't know how to process it or perceive it. You just know that you don't feel okay and that you're not having a good time and that it's not okay. And, you know, that was a lot of my life growing up, the majority of it. I spent a long time very unhappy, very depressed, and it definitely got worse with age, you know, and we've previously talked about my ADHD diagnosis.
How old were you when that came in again?
Sophomore in high school. Okay. Well, I got diagnosed with ADHD from a young age, like kindergarten is when I first got diagnosed, and I got held back a year in kindergarten. But it wasn't until sophomore year where we went to the ADHD doctor and I got diagnosed with untreatable ADHD, which is where it got real bad. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like from a young age, I knew I didn't belong with everybody else. And it was just this constant feeling of not belonging, no matter what group I was in, no matter what space I was in. I didn't feel like I fit in with everybody else. And that just kept getting reaffirmed with every single situation I was in, you know. And I was wanting to hang out with girls a lot when I was younger. And it wasn't like a sexual attraction thing. It was like I got along with women better in general, and I'd hang out with women more. And then that really, really peaked in high school. But I also think it was difficult because I didn't know what was going on. And I was a man in women's spaces, and women would treat you as such, you know, and there's certain things I wouldn't be able to do with the women that I was hanging out with and with the girl group, and certain experiences I wouldn't get to have and conversations I wouldn't get to have. And like those just fed into the, oh, I don't belong here. You know, I'm not fitting in. So yeah, it's really interesting to think about. As soon as I understood and had a concept of gender, I think I started latching on to the idea that mine wasn't what I thought it was. I definitely rebelled against the idea of being trans for a long time. And it's funny, I absolutely incorporate that with Silence of the Lambs a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a couple formative pieces of media that I saw growing up about trans people, and it implanted this idea that trans means you're mentally ill, which, okay, it's not untrue, but like, you know, we're all mentally ill and it's just a different form of mental illness, but like it was more synonymous with like this idea of crazy or just like, you know, and I was like, that can't be me.
It was like, you know, an exploitation of a mental illness. So for context, so Silence of the Lambs was what was that, 96 94, maybe?
It might have it was late.
Do you know 90s. how old you were?
All I know is, because we've talked about the VHSs before, my mom gave me her VHS player, and then she gave me her entire set of VHS films. So it was at an age where she was okay with me watching rated R movies. So it was definitely middle school, high school. And I was just going through her VHS collection alone in my room, just like for months. And Silence of the Lambs was one of those VHSs, and I absolutely loved that film. It was so good. It's so good. It's so good. I actually...
And yet, there's this piece in there, right?
Well, it's funny
because...
You got
Jodie Foster on one hand.
our baby gay getting her wonderful, like, career role, of course. Like, and it's funny because it took me a long time to return to that movie. We might end up cutting this later, but... I finally bought it a couple months ago and rewatched it. And
it triggering?
No, it was triggering in a cathartic way.
Okay.
Where they actually do have a scene where they specifically say Buffalo Bill isn't trans and that trans people are different. And I actually have a whole tangent about that we'll save for another episode, but to numb it down, I think that they were playing with gender ideas that they didn't fully understand at that time. And I think that there's a lot to be said about people who experience gender dysphoria who haven't dealt with it yet and what kind of people they've turned into. And so it's hard for me to have, because for those who don't understand, there is the scene where Buffalo Bill,
who is a serial killer, and Jodie Foster is, give us the whole rollout, like, give us the log line.
Our baby gay Jodie Foster is a detective with the FBI, and she's tasked with hunting down a serial killer named Buffalo Bill, who is killing and skinning women. You know, has the help of Hannibal Lecter, which is not necessarily important to my part, but near the end, Buffalo Bill's doing a scene in the mirror where he's dancing, and he's doing this thing called tucking, where he tucks his genitalia in to make it look like it's the opposite. And he, you know, says to the camera certain things, and it gives you the sense that Buffalo Bill wants to be a woman, and that's why he's doing these things. And they do kind of pave the way in the movie, and much more so in the book, that that's not necessarily what's going on. But that's still where my mind ran with it, and that's still where people's mind ran with it. And the mirror scene is so much more imposed on people's brain than the scene of, you know, Jack Crawford saying, oh, but this isn't a trans person. Like, trans people are different, you know?
Oh, no, it was horrifying. And, I mean, you know, in retrospect, we can understand the mechanics of, oh, God, really shabby thinking in the storytelling. And that movie in particular, in looking at other trans people's stories, is they go back to this movie. Yes. And part of it is because of the impact of that scene, the association of, well, if you want to be a gender that's not your own, then there's something deeply, deeply flawed with you, and it's going to drive you crazy, and it's going to drive you to these horrible extremes. I mean, there was no good messaging in it, except for little tiny Jodie Foster going toe-to-toe, you know, with another serial killer, and it was very confusing. And I also think it was the time that... It's hard to imagine that movie getting made at any other time in general.
Yeah.
But because 10 years later, nobody would have said that was a good idea.
Yes.
10 years early, there would have been even more sort of rejection of it on lots of layers. So it broke through, but in my opinion, like 85% in bad ways, and then Jodie Foster.
Well, and you know, obviously, I don't want to spend the whole thing on Silence of the Lambs, but I really love that movie, and I'm glad I own it, and I'm gonna watch it regularly. And it's hard for me to not. I'm not gonna just shoot it down for people. It's a wonderfully made movie, and they do try and undo what they started doing in that movie with the trans representation, but. Life is a paradox, you know. Christopher Nolan taught me that. So, like, it's a great movie that I love watching, and it's also very problematic and screwed me up a lot. And that segues really nicely because, you know, brushing over early childhood, because my memory is a fog, it wasn't until high school that I was with this friend group. We were part of the adventure class, which I've talked about previously in episodes. So this was at the point where I was leading the adventure class, and I was, you know, a leader. I want to say sophomore year, actually. That's really funny that it all came down like that. I had a friend who had a partner who changed their gender. They were female to male, and they became a different person, went by a different name, and the group that I was with was very accepting and affirming of that. And it sparked this idea in my head of, like, oh, my God, we can do that? You know, like, interesting, and this was right around the time where I did something really horrible. It wasn't, like, bad, but it definitely impacted another human and definitely left them with some trauma. And it left me with a lot of trauma. And self-inflicted trauma is a doozy. Oh my gosh. And so I very much had a destroyed opinion of myself. And it was the first time in my life that I guess you could call it a suicide attempt. But it was the first time in my life that I knew I wanted to take my own life. And, you know, I had a plan on how I was going to do it. And because of how far it got, everything in my brain was like, we need help now, or this is going to happen. There was nothing stopping me at that point. And so I got some help. Around that time was when I decided to start going by another name. And, not to dead name myself, but it was Jenny or my dead name. They both start with the same letter, so it was like Jenny was like an abbreviated version, and I didn't associate it with the stuff that I went through at all. Like I didn't associate it with that at all. It was I needed a change, and suddenly being a new person, it sounded like a good change, and it sounded like something I needed to do, and I was just really sick of who I was as a person at that point. And so I started going by the other name, and it was Jenny or my dead name. And I considered myself gender fluid, being that I am both and neither, you know, I'm whatever you want. And I would say to myself, I'm not ready to lose the masculine parts of myself yet. I actually frickin' said that to myself. And I absolutely do think that the reason I didn't take the trans label is because of media like Silence of the Lambs, and there was also a 2020 episode back in early 2000s about being trans, and because it's on 2020, it's like, oh, it's weird, it's weird people, it's bad things, it's 2020, you know.
Serious journalism, it's on network TV, what they say is really well researched, and this is real journalism.
You're gonna feel bad afterwards. So yeah, you know, and so I was like, oh, I'm not a man. I'm not a man. I know that. I knew that at a young age. But I'm not. I'm not trans. I'm not. Don't worry, guys. I'm not trans. Like, that could never be me. And, you know, like I said, at this time, I was a leader in the adventure classes. And what that incorporated is I was getting a group of students who were my age and younger and older to obey, follow what I was saying and listen to me. And, like, form bonds and form a group and group dynamics and, you know, conflict resolution. And, you know, I told these spaces that I wanted to start going by Jenny. And the idea was, because the queer representation that I found at that age was through the adventure class, in the adventure class, I would encourage them to call me Jenny. And then everywhere else, it wouldn't matter as much. And what started to happen is this adventure class really started to emotionally help me work on a lot of my trauma. And it also gave me this idea of a person who people looked up to and who could get things done and who made really great lesson plans and had really great conflict resolution sessions and had really great team building activity ideas. And, you know, these pupils would come in and scream, "Hey, Jenny," and like be so happy to see me. And Jenny started becoming this positive association thing. You know, dead name was a mess up, was a screw up. You know, dead name couldn't even keep good grades in school. Dead name couldn't have a good relationship with their mother. But Jenny can do these great things. Jenny became this just really positive association name. And I didn't realize how much of a hold it had taken and how much it mattered. And then senior year, I started dating a girl. And this was my first really, really serious relationship. I had already lost my virginity by this point, but this was the first time I had been in love. And I very much took on a cisgendered, heterosexual role in that relationship. And so Jenny kind of fell apart for a little bit. And we went back to dead name for a while. And there was a couple points in this relationship where, you know, I had played around with the idea of looking more feminine. Her and I actually had gotten in a fight because I wanted to wear makeup at one point, and she was worried she wasn't going to be attracted to me. We got in this horrible fight, and then she put makeup on me afterwards, and she's like, "I was an idiot for thinking that. Like, you look great." So it was always there at the back of my head, but it was like there was barriers preventing me from discovering it and from going forward. And I think a lot of that was unfortunately connected to trauma and where I was and brain development, you know? And like, there's so much talks nowadays about should we let kids transition or whatnot. I think people need to understand that any conversation about gender is going to be shades of gray. And that's the point. And I think that starting hormone therapy at a young age is definitely a conversation with doctors and parents and is different person to person. But at the same time, I can't help but wonder if I had had the terminology at a younger age, if I had understood myself younger, would I have had such a hard time? Would I have attempted suicide? Would I have done horrible things before I transitioned? You know, because it was there. It was very much there for a long time. And it wasn't until I was an adult and out of the house. Also, it's important to note, throughout most of middle school and high school, I was wanting to grow my hair out. I actually shaved my head in high school for a little bit. But I was wanting to grow it out after that, and my mom was so insistent that I wasn't allowed to grow my hair out because she was convinced I wasn't going to take care of it, and it was going to become a mop on my head. So, you know, because I was still under my mom's roof, I had to get my hair cut regularly, and my hair growing out is definitely a huge part of my gender journey, because once it did grow out and looks really great and luscious, it's like, wow. People don't understand how much of a thing like hair is, or clothes, you know. You start changing them on yourself, and your entire opinion of yourself starts to change. You know, how you're being perceived by the world starts to change, and that's freaking huge. Huge. Oh my goodness. So yeah, I don't know. That's kind of the glossing over of the early stages, and then next would just be adulthood and the actual transition itself.
Can I ask you a couple of questions before we move on to...
Yes.
Adulthood, whatever that is. In high school, did you go to, because it could have gone either way in the place where you grew up, whether it was conservative or kind of on the liberal side or a mishmash. Yeah. So I went to two high schools, and one of the high schools was called Bi High. And part of the thinking here was, yes, it was the 80s.
I love
it. Wow. But at the same time, it really kind of made a declaration. So some people would use it disparagingly, but other people were like, but this is where people who are not fitting, you know, all of the norms. We didn't have any language back then, but if you were not quote unquote a normal person, whatever that was, then this was the high school that you went to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did you feel like there was space for you at your high school?
Yes. Well, and the thing is, I went to a high school. It's the biggest in the state. There are high schools. There are cities in the state that are smaller than my high school. Graduating class was 900 people, and it was the smallest it had been in 5 years. So to just give you, my high school is freaking huge. And because of how big it is, there is going to be all these groups there. You know, there absolutely was.
And probably in multiples.
Yes, there absolutely was. I believe they called it Spectrum was the queer club at my high school. So there were spaces, and I feel like theater and adventure were the biggest spaces where queers would find each other, and those would bleed into themselves. And I never felt comfortable going to Spectrum. I think I went like a couple times, but you know, I was very much involved in the adventure space, and there was a lot of people in that space who were okay with it. You know, the adventure class is actually managed by two adult instructors. And one of the adults, he only went by one letter, so I don't think it would matter, but I'm going to change it anyway. We'll call him M. You know, when I came out in high school, when you start adventure, it's a circle, and we all circle up so we can see each other and do announcements for the good of the group. And I was like, my announcement is I'm going by Jenny now. And I was one of the leaders of the class, and M was like, okay. You know, like, you could tell he didn't get it, but he also knew what space this was, and he wasn't going to shoot it down. And he started calling me Jenny. So, like, you know, I had adults who were behind it, absolutely, at a young age, and were respectful of it. Adults like you who chose Jenny over my dead name. But they didn't make they didn't advertise it. And then, yeah, my mother, you know, I came out to her as gender fluid during high school, and like, that's such a new term. Like, what does that mean? And I'm sure the way I explained it was horrible. Some of them's like, okay, you know, I don't care. And I think it's important to note that I have various members of my family, or at least one in particular, who is bisexual. And so my mom is comfortable with the idea of gay. And she actually asked me a couple times throughout my upbringing if I was gay, which is so funny to reflect on, because it was definitely because I had feminine moments and I would act super femme sometimes. But then when I actually transitioned as an adult and I said, you need to start calling me Jenny or you're not going to see me anymore, her gut was like, she was like, my gut just says this isn't right. Like, it doesn't make sense. There weren't any signs. And I was like, what? What do you mean? What do you mean there weren't any signs? They're so clear to me. You literally thought I was gay multiple times because of how effeminate I would be sometimes. So yeah, just really, really funny. My mom took time with it. She's loving, she's supportive, but she's stubborn. She believes what she wants to believe. And there were a few fights between us, you know, a fight of just, wasn't yelling, but it was definitely raised voices of, well, I don't give a crap what your gut says. You either call me Jenny or this is it. We're done. You know, like, you're my mom, but, you know, and I think that's important for people to understand, like, I absolutely do love my mother. Not having her in my life would be devastating. Devastating. There was one time she went under surgery for hip surgery, and I was crying because my gut was telling me she was going to die, which she didn't. But, like, devastating. But Jenny is who I am through and through, to the point that if you can't accept that, every time I see you, you're going to be dead-naming me, it's going to hurt. Every time I see you, I'm going to feel like crap. I'm going to be depressed. I'm going to hate it. I'm not going to deal with that. I can't deal with that. It's my mental health. I this isn't a choice, you know? So she eventually got there.
How old were you when you kind of gave that ultimatum and, like, took the quote unquote choice away from her?
Well, let's see. 2020 is when I realized I was a woman, a trans woman. We've glossed over that story, but I can give a little more detail on it. So it was around that time, cause I was seeing her regularly in 2021, cause the pandemic had happened. So we were coming back from that. And that's, you know, during 2020, I spent a lot of time asking myself who Jenny was and forming Jenny as a person, a lot of psychedelic drugs, and so 2021 rolls around and I'm Jenny through and through now. This is Jenny, you know, and I'm seeing my mom and she would dead name me. And it's like, no, I'm Jenny. Like, this is it. She, her pronouns. You don't have you. I did literally say to her, you either have a daughter or you don't have a child. Because those are your options. You know, I get you got attached to this idea of having a son. And I think that's what it was for her. I think a lot of parents create ideas of who their children are going to be in their head. You know, gender reveal parties are harmful because it's affirming that, oh, I'm having a boy. I'm having a girl. You know, I'm fine with assigning pronouns to a baby. I'm fine with you choosing the baby's name because they can't speak for themselves yet. But, like, getting attached to this is a boy is exactly why later on in life, when I'm not a boy, it's harmful. It's crappy. I have to undo so much of this work that my mom has done in her head in order for us to have a relationship. But she got there. She called me her child for a few years. You know, she wouldn't call me her son or her daughter. She called me her child. So I was like, all right, you know what? It's a small victory. But then, you know, I think
it was... Did she do any work, do you know?
How do you mean?
Did she go and try to educate herself or join any of these amazing groups that kind of talk it through with the parents or the family members or the friends?
No, definitely not. Okay. And I don't necessarily blame her for that.
Oh, gosh, no. I'm just asking.
No, but no, definitely not. I would try and educate her a little bit and explain it to her the best I could. And I think after she started seeing Jenny more, because she also had, you know, not requests, but, like, because it's a growing process. It's a two-way street. So she'd be like, well, maybe if I saw you in feminine clothes more around me, it would help. And I'm like, okay, you know, because normally I when I'm not caring, I'd wear sweats and a t-shirt. But when I am caring, I'd fem up. And I'm like, that's fair. You know, and she would try. She would get me, like, a manicure set for my birthday. You know, she would let us paint our nails together. So it was just about getting that experience in as me being a woman and me being a femme around her and her taking the time to get comfortable with it. Because that was one of her big arguments in our big, big fight about it is because she was still calling me my dead name and she was still referring to me by he, him. And I was like, you got to stop. And she's like, it's going to take me time. And I'm like, I understand if it takes you time, but I need to see the effort or it's not going to happen. You know, I don't care if you dead name me and then correct yourself. I don't care if you give me the improper pronouns, he, him, me, and then correct yourself. That's fine. But doing it and then not correcting yourself, it just about is about seeing that you care and that you're putting in the effort. And that goes to anybody out there. If you dead name somebody or if you misgender somebody, don't apologize. Don't say, oh, I'm sorry, she, her. Just correct yourself and move on. Pretend it never happened, you know, because that's what we want to do. We don't want you to draw attention to it because it sucks. It hurts. We want you to correct and move on. Excellent. Because everybody does it. You know, I was he, him for 20 years of my, well, 2020, so 22 years of my life by that point. Of course it's going to take time. I would misgender myself in my head all the time. It took me time to get it down. You know, it's okay if it takes time, but it's about the effort, it's about the corrections, it's about caring, you know, and you don't look like an idiot when you have to correct yourself. It's natural, it's part of human nature. Correct and move on. That's all you have to do.
And to accept the correction, that if somebody says, oh, yeah, hey, it's actually, then say, okay, thank you. And then be on it.
Because so many people's egos get involved in this. And it's like, this isn't about your ego. This isn't about you. You know, just adjust and move on. I think it was a couple years ago that she finally referred to me as her daughter in public and around somebody. And I'll never forget that. Wow. That was really special for me. That really meant a lot. And she does correct family members, absolutely, on, like, you know, when I'm not there. I know she does. She's very firm about she, her pronouns with people. So it wasn't perfect with her, but honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way. I really wouldn't. I think her coming around to it and us working on it together really strengthened our relationship, especially because high school hurt our relationship so badly and there was just so much turmoil. And so having that reset with my gender as an adult being the background and the baseline for the recreation of that relationship really helped. You know, and she did get there and she did understand because she is an empathetic person at the end of the day. And I'd much, much, much rather have somebody who I have to work with it on, who I have to fight a little bit, who gets there, than somebody who doesn't at all or doesn't care, you know?
And something you just said made me think about another episode conversation where we were talking about, well, let me come at it from this way. Your life improved, your sense of self and your presence in this life improved once you stepped into Jenny in whatever form that took. Things improved with your mom. And, you know, it just seems so very obvious to me that it's because you were finally getting to be who you actually are. And when we do get to step into that and have it be embraced on whatever level, you know, it makes all the difference because you're not spending all of this energy trying to, you know, deny who you are, trying to carry the shame of it, trying to, you know, make space for what society thinks is supposed to be. So how wonderful that you were able to connect with it at a relatively young age.
You know, there's this psychologist, I don't remember who it was, who, this was like the 60s, which was crazy, who made a quote that was like, if you were gay or you were trans, I believe they used transvestite at the time because that was the accepted term. If you were gay or you were transvestite and you were not accepting that about yourself, you will never live a happy life. You will never be happy. You know, you won't find happiness until you accept that part of yourself.
And it doesn't mean that you can't experience happiness and experience joy, but you know, this is what I enjoy about our modern world is people are understanding that if we can't be our most truest selves, it's not only a disservice to us, but it's a disservice to the whole world because you're going to get so much more done when you get to be who you truly are.
Yeah. And I think gender in particular is a really, really difficult one for the politics of the world because of the minutia behind it and because of the gray areas. The brainwashing on the other side is very effective. Yeah. Because, yeah, gender dysphoria is a mental illness. Absolutely is. The only treatment for it is transition. Mm-hmm. And obviously it starts to get more difficult when you look at non-binary people. And non-binary people absolutely do not get the representation they need in media. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if binary versus non-binary is a conversation we have time for in this, or if we want to transition to that.
Yeah, I think we can touch on it a bit. Okay. I was just listening to one of my all-time favorite astrologers, Jessica Lagnado, and she was working with somebody who... So explain what non-binary is, if you would.
So non-binary is the idea that your gender doesn't fall into the binary of man or woman. And it is such a huge spectrum of maybe you identify as both, maybe you identify as neither. Gender fluid, the idea behind it is you are one at certain points and you're one at other points. And you kind of flow between them evenly. But the point being that neither box fits you super well, you know, and
then there are people who are neither gender.
Yes.
So I think that we used like androgynous growing up in the 80s and 90s, but it's not the same thing.
No. Well, this reminds me of a conversation I had with one of my mom's friends who's gay, and he's a gay Gen Xer. And him and I were talking, and we were drunk. It was such a good talk. Because people will ask you so many more freaking gender questions when you're drunk. It's like, yes, ask me, finally. I know you've been dying to. Now you're not afraid to because you're drunk. Let's get into this. And he was like, you know, I wore women's shoes when I was a kid, but it's because I was gay. And I was like, well, that's how we explained it back then. Yeah, but... I am actually attracted to women. I'm not attracted to men at all. And that blew his mind. He was like, what?
Separate the gender thing, yes, with the sexuality thing, and then to say it could be everything or nothing. It could be, yeah.
But like calling someone androgynous in the 90s, I do wonder if that person would have been non-binary today. You know? Possibly.
Probably. You know, and I'm going through because I was a theater kid and Bi High. So like, yes, like all of my friends were
so many eggs there
in really, really interesting places. And happily, as all theater kids can attest, everybody's accepted, man. Yeah. They just are. So yay, I got to have that experience. But so let me go back to the Jessica Lagnado thing for just a second. And it is a shameless plug because she's fantastic. And she's one of the only queer forward astrologists that I have come across. And she speaks with folks across the spectrum because astrology is not a gender thing at all. It's not a sexuality thing. But so no. She was speaking to the person who's gender fluid or she hadn't even really sort of settled on, and you know, labels, whatever, you know, again, we taking away choices is what happens a lot with labels. But anyway, so what she really came down to with this person is just like, you know, if you want to dress more femme at 10 a.m. and then you can't wait to get into, you know, your basketball gear and hit the courts at 11, like, who is stopping you? She's like, basically your wardrobe expenses is what's stopping you. So like, yeah, have all the clothes and then stop fighting the clothes. Yeah. Let the clothes be the thing that makes you comfortable. And if that changes 7 times during a day, because I think there's also this idea that, I'm femme for 2 weeks and then I'm more masculine for, you know, and there's no rules to it. Yes. It's mostly just embracing whatever, again, like being your truest self in that moment. So I'm interested so at what point were you started wearing makeup in high school.
No, and then, I started wearing makeup as an adult. I did not wear makeup.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the having some play with your girlfriend. So you experimented.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We did do one. Yes, I did experiment, but okay. Because of how bad she was at makeup, it didn't go great. So I just didn't like it.
Throwing some shade.
Sorry if you're watching this.
All right, so when did you start playing with makeup and making it part of your expression?
So, okay, so, you know, 2020 rolls around. We get big resets around the world. I get catharsis on a really big trauma thing that happened in my life that I did, that I got closure on, that maybe I didn't deserve closure on, but I got it anyway.
Everyone deserves forgiveness.
Yeah, you're right. And then I went to my friend's wedding, and, you know, when she was telling me about it, it was in my head, wear women's clothes to this wedding, wear a dress, you can do it. And it ended up not being a dress, but because of how comfortable I felt in a dress and in women's clothing, and I'm sure I said this that last episode, but going into a women's clothing store as a perceived man and as masculine presenting and as someone who looks straight up like a man and saying, I need to get something for myself and I need to try on some clothes. Holy cow. That is one of the most terrifying things I've ever had to do. Yeah. Thank goodness the lady at Torrid was so sweet, so kind. She let me try on a bunch of things. But like,
how did you decide where to go? I mean, that's like, that's a serious thing. Like,
it was, so Torrid is a plus-size women's store, so if anybody was going to have women's clothing, it was going to be a plus-size women's, like, women's clothing that fit me, it was going to be a plus-size women's clothing store. I wanted to go somewhere where I could hash it out for a little bit, try on various outfits, and actually walk away with something that I liked. And I knew the only way to do that was to go to a store that was going to fit me. And at the time, I was living in a city that had a mall, that had a Torrid at it.
Called Torrid. I mean, like, yeah. Hey, that's just fun.
Yeah, it's one letter away from my star sign, so that's perfect. spelled differently, but you know. And so my grandma gave me the fundage to do it, which I love her for that. My grandma's been the most supportive person in my family. She's the only family member who's ever called me beautiful. Oh my gosh, I cannot ever forget that. She's been really, really supportive of my gender transition the entire time. She never had any issues. I never questioned it. And I think having certain family members be on board immediately also changed my mom, because she wasn't on board immediately, but her mom was. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, okay. So my grandma paid for it.
So this expectation that, like, the boomers are not able to wrap their heads around. No.
One of my conservative great-aunt-in-laws who watches Fox News every morning found out I transitioned. She was like, that's great. I'm like, what? What? And then I used that as ammo against my mom, where I was like, Mom, the most conservative person in our family is on board with this. And I can tell that f***ed her up. Sorry, that messed her up. I did it. I knew it was going to happen this episode. But I could tell that messed her up, because it's like, well, shoot, I can't argue with that. And it's like, yeah, you need to get on board.
Isn't that interesting? So, you know, yeah. So part of it is this... And this might be like a whole other episode unto itself, but it's this idea of also assuming the worst about, you know, the people around us, the society around us. And granted, there's lots of people out there who really make it clear that, like, it's dangerous. It's dangerous to be who you are. And this is across many different populations. But there's these folks that unexpectedly will step forward on our behalf, and how do you keep your heart guarded the way it needs to be guarded in a world, especially now, that is, you know, so has so much vitriol, but to also leave it just a little bit open for the people who surprise you.
Well, and I think that would be a really good episode idea, of talking about politics nowadays. And
because it's kind of our job, is to figure out what our lines are, what our boundaries are, and then to do everything we can to support those boundaries. And this is across the board, you know, in all things. And it also pertains to You know, you have CPTSD, and CPTSD often presents itself as like being a people pleaser and like, you know, just accepting, going with the flow, even if the flow is deeply not good for you.
It's garbage. Just, yes. Yeah,
just being the peacemaker and the diplomat and sort of allowing self-harm to happen if it keeps things moving, right?
It goes back to why I'm comfortable having this conversation is because there are so many people who are truly, truly, truly just misinformed. And if they have the empathy to put themselves aside for a second and listen, some of those people can be swayed. And, you know, I don't want to say brought to the other side because I don't think our politics are binary in this country at all. I don't think anything's binary. But, you know, they can be swayed. And if it's a conversation that's going to help people understand, a conversation needs to be had. And I understand if certain trans and queer people aren't comfortable doing that, totally valid, totally respectable. They shouldn't have to. Because I am comfortable doing that, I see it as my job. Because a conversation does need to be had for some people, for a lot of people. And I am not only comfortable doing that, I enjoy doing it. Somebody can say something super ignorant to me and I can tell it's coming from the right place and it won't hurt me. There are some stories that I've told to people of conversations. I had an amazing conversation with one of my old coworkers about allowing trans people into sports and about gender itself. And this is somebody who always saw me as a woman and was super appreciative, but couldn't understand gender and couldn't understand being trans, and so she wanted to ask me questions and I encouraged it, and she said a lot of really ignorant things, and it's because that's what she knew. And there's so many queer people I know who would hear those ignorant things and immediately shut down because of their CPTSD around it. And of course, but that's not how it is for me. And so, you know, it's important, and I feel like it's the same with politics, that somebody may not see the way you do, but you still vibe with them as a person, and destroying that connection might be what pushes them all the way back into that side of politics really hardcore, you know, and pushes them away from getting better and understanding. You know, somebody who's trying to understand the transgender experience asks a trans person a question, and if they're met with harshness and rudeness and anger, what is
which
that gonna
is their right. Like, however you respond is how you respond, but...
But, like, what is that going to do for their perception of trans people, you know? And, like, I feel like just leading with patience overall as much as we can is really the lesson here for everybody, especially queer folk. And just saying, I'm not comfortable having that conversation, but here's some outlets you can look. Gently telling people to do a Google search, you know, and just being like, it's available, the information's there. But I think having somebody who you've seen as a woman for the past 4 months, having a trans person, because it's like, it goes back to racism, you know, like people who are racist would hang out with people who are not white and see that they're good people and good to be around, and it start whittling away at that, you know. And it's so similar for being trans, where a lot of people who don't accept trans rights would hang out with me and enjoy me as a person. And now 6 months in, we're able to start having that conversation of, okay, are your viewpoints starting to shift? How do you feel about gender now? And it's just that seed. I'm not going to win that conversation in that moment. All I want to hear is somebody say, huh, that's interesting. Because maybe next week they'll be thinking about it. And then maybe they'll be thinking about it the next time they see a trans person in public or when their niece comes out as trans. And suddenly, now they're an ally, or they're starting to be an ally. We're starting to get that framework in there because they are starting to get it. They have real world connections to connect it to.
Yeah, I think this, and this goes back to the greater conversation that we've always been interested in is, you know, I hate the word woke, but yeah. You know, like, you can be a really effective grassroots activist, because you have gotten to a place where it can't hurt you, or if it does hurt you, you know how to manage it.
Yeah.
And you know how to go and get support around that and to move on in a healthy way, so you're not internalizing it. But you know, so there's all of these things that we get hurt by for sort of ridiculous reasons. It's got nothing yes. to do with us, but darn it, there's something in us that is, you know, that's getting sparked And so I go to a psychic school, and one of the things I always talk about is that if somebody says something or does something and you get riled up about it, like, it's got nothing to do with them. It's an opportunity for you to, like, look at it closer and to realize, okay, that's a place that I need to do work in. And isn't it interesting, like, because that's just therapy, right? You're going to hear that anywhere you go to any therapist, and they're going to talk about that. But I learned it in psychic school. So however you are connecting to the bigger picture on any of these topics that kind of go against maybe what you were taught, or your own perceptions of it. But I think you bring up a really good point. There's no light switch that suddenly somebody's going to be like, oh, I get it now. It really is just piece by piece starting to, and this is where, it's a full circle. It goes back to the representation piece, that if you are now seeing LGBTQIA people in the media, and not doing that horrible self-hating gay thing or the sassy best friend thing where they're just actually people, you know, living their lives amongst a larger cast and a larger community, then there's now a door open in it where there isn't the knee jerk, well, I have to turn this off because that person there, who is still only a secondary character, like, let's not make any mistake here. They're still not the heroes. We're getting there. Damn it, we're getting there. That it's not such a knee-jerk thing. And then maybe the next time you come across somebody who is trans, you have some basis of recognition and comparison, and it just seems less scary. But you have to, we all humans in general have to continue to take those seeds, right, and to embrace them and to let it be possible that there's much, much more going on in this world and in this universe than perhaps what we learned by the eighth grade.
Well, and you brought up this idea of a light switch moment, and I do think that they exist.
They do exist. It's true.
But
and they blow the curb for everyone.
Right, but in order to get there, you have to scrub off everything beforehand. You know, I had my light switch moment. I absolutely, me figuring out as a trans woman was a light switch moment of, oh my God. But it only came after going by Jenny as a gender fluid person for 7 years. Yeah. You know, nobody should rush their transition. Like, please don't. Like, I hear you. I know you just want to get into it. But if you are starting to question, use this as an opportunity to take the time to get to know yourself. And I know that comes from a place of privilege because I was an early transitioner. Like, transitioning in my early 20s is early transitioning. And I know some people who just get it done in a couple years and it's like, okay, great. But
the emotional afterlife like is extensive. Like the actual physical aspects, so the hormones, etc., whatever they choose to do, maybe in a short time span, but there's, you know, it's a lifetime. It's a lifetime of looking at it and being it. There's lots to talk about here. Jenny, thank you
so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for holding the space for this. This was awesome. And that time flew by, and hopefully this isn't a nightmare to edit, but
we could do 3 hours. Honestly, there's so much.
So much.
So thank you very much. And everybody, thank you. And we will see you next week.
Yeah. Cheers. Meow,
cheers, meow. Meow, meow.